Couple days ago, five chiefs sat down at the National Press Gallery in Ottawa before media to issue their critique and their rejection of the First Nation Control of First Nations Education Act. This is a piece of legislation, Bill C-33, that has inspired quite a bit of opposition, protest, and grassroots discontent. I sat down today with Grand Chief Gordon Peters of the Association of Iroquois and Allied Indians. He was one of the chiefs in Ottawa recently to speak to the media. The Association of Iroquois and Allied Indians is a nonprofit organization which advocates for the political interests of eight member nations here in Ontario. That includes the Oneida, the Mohawk, the Delaware, the Potawatomi, and the Ojibwe. And here is what he had to say. Grand Chief Gordon Peters, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a good topic to discuss.
It's a big topic, isn't it? People are talking about it. I'm not hearing a lot of support for this legislation out in Indian country. I can't find anyone who thinks it's a good bill. Do you know anyone who even thinks it's a good bill?
Minister Valcourt is the only one that I know, and Sean Attlee, our national chief, are the only two that I know that thinks it's a good bill. But there are academics from colleges and universities who are saying that this is a flawed process, that you can't possibly move forward with this and have expectations that things are going to change in the relationship or the quality of education.
You did a press conference in Ottawa. You've also released some statements on your website, and I'll direct people to that. You've said that this legislation does not meet the 5 points that the AFN says it meets. First of all, why do you think the AFN says this is good? What could they be thinking?
I don't know. I think for the last few years, the National Chief has ran in a campaign that he's going to deal with education. Education has become a priority of his. And I think sometimes you get caught up in trying to achieve something and you try to move something even after the prolonged negotiations are not good for you. And I think that's where he's at right today. And he's trying to get this thing passed. It might be a legacy thing for him. I don't know for sure.
What do you see when you look at this bill? What's wrong with it?
The first thing that I see with this particular bill is with respect to the first item that we had on the five conditions is jurisdiction. And this in no way provides any greater control to our communities than what currently exists. The minister still has authority within this process as an oversight. There's still a joint council of professionals that nobody really knows what they do, that are also an oversight process. There's no attempt to deal with the matter of jurisdiction. There's no attempt to be able to discuss it in any kind of context. It puts something in the preamble, but the preamble doesn't do anything for us with respect to the exercise of jurisdiction. And that becomes a fundamental problem for us to be able to move ahead. Because it's still, really what it's still doing, then it's still dictating how we're going to be able to do education in our territories.
This is the process that we have. The federal government says, we've talked to the Assembly of First Nations, we have a bill here, and you get to look at it, and there it is. Should there even, do you think there should be a piece of legislation, or should there be some other agreement or process for First Nations education?
I said at the press conference that this, if we're talking about Canadian values and principles, this equity and fairness, money should be provided to be able to help us with our education immediately. And we shouldn't have to go through all these hoops of this legislative process. We said in the beginning, the first time I met with the former minister, his name was, I think his name was Duncan. I met with him, and my proposition to him was, let's get together, let's form a small group, let's look at what those financial needs are, and let's see how we can get money to the communities through the current policy process. And that would allow us to be able to move fairly quickly to get some things done, and it would help the communities. He said they didn't have a statutory base to move forward. I say he has a statutory base, and it's within the Indian Act. And so there's some kind of misinformation that the government's trying to generate to say we need the statutory base in order to continue to provide ongoing funding. Really, they're using the statutory base for one thing only, and that's to be able to eliminate any federal liability with respect to education. It's clear in the document that federal liability is gone. The minister holds no liability whatsoever, but he still holds the controls.
So you think that the federal government is worried that if they give money to communities, they'll be in some sort of liability? For what exactly would they be liable?
Well, what they're doing, what they say is that they have obligations to be able to provide funding right now under the Indian Act from age 6 to 16. What they're saying is that once they put the new legislation in place, they will be no longer liable to provide that financial base to communities. It will be in the new agreement, but there will be no federal responsibility. And so what communities fear is that down the road, they'll end up having to pay for their own education.
Some of our communities already have education programs and education systems, and we're teaching the language and the kids are learning the language. We're already doing this. Why do we need this bill, and how is it going to affect what we're already doing? Do you have concerns about that?
The impact is pretty inclusive. In this region in Ontario, you have communities that already have boards of education set up, and they're already doing language programs, they're doing cultural programs within their communities, and groups of communities who are banding together. You have communities like the Union of Ontario Indians, all their communities that have been in negotiations with the federal government for some time on the exercise of control over education, as well as Anishinaabe-Eski. They're all northern communities. But this bill, when it comes, it's going to remove everything that's in place. It's going to make everything compliant to this act. Everything you do, and everywhere there's funding from the federal government, you will have to be able to make it compliant to what the act says.
As a Grand Chief representing treaty and treaty groups, what do you feel is the AFN's role? Do they have a role? Should they have a role? Should they have gotten involved in this? What do you see as the proper place of the AFN, if any?
Well, really, there should have been no role for AFN in it. We should have been trying to do this one-size-fits-all education legislation. That, to me, is the fundamental flaw that's there. And it started when the federal government wanted to be able to have a national panel. And out of that national panel, they wanted to produce legislation. Ontario did not participate in the national panel. They refused, said, we don't need a national panel to tell us how we want to be able to have a relationship with the federal government and how we want to be able to educate our children. Quebec also did the same, and so did Saskatchewan. So this whole beginning of this process as it started out wasn't driven by the communities. It was actually driven by AFN. And I don't think AFN has a role here. I don't think AFN has a role in the exercise of jurisdiction or anything else. I've heard a number of times that the national chiefs say, my job is to open doors, to get out of the way. And yet you have him supporting this legislation. In what capacity does he support legislation? He has no authority to support any legislation within this process. That decision rests clearly with the leadership across the country. And if the leadership across the country say that they don't support it, then his job is to say, I don't support it either, not to be able to say the contrary.
Now, some of the folks who are critical of this bill have also been trying to create an alternative to the Assembly of First Nations. There's certainly two different models there, one based on treaties and respecting and furthering the treaties. AFN, of course, is not a treaty organization. They don't represent, or they haven't signed a treaty. Where does this bill fit into that larger effort of treaties?
Well, that's a good question, and And you'll find that most the treaty areas will say that they have a relationship already with the Crown, and the Crown has to come directly to them to be able to engage in any kind of relationship issue, whether it be education, whether it be social, economic, land, any issues. Those are specific to those areas and that relationship that they have. That's why they take the strong position that AFN has no business being involved in any kind of legislative process. That's going to be like a pan-Indian approach that everybody's going to be able to follow in. As far as the organization, the Assembly of First Nations, it was created as a means of being able to bring people together to share their common views and experiences and to be able to figure out how to work together. The ultimate goal was to be able to create out of their process of nations going forward, of people working on their governance at home, of people being able to find a way of coming more together as collective groups than as individual chiefs from communities. And so that work in some places is happening, and some others it's not. And I just think that right now, as we're moving forward, it's a clear indicator that AFN was never created to be a one-window opportunity for the governments to talk to someone and never have to talk to anybody else. That was never the intent of the AFN. It's being misused. It's being abused right now by both the National Chief and the Minister of Indian Affairs.
Now, you sat down in Ottawa at the National Press Gallery with four other chiefs? Chief Delisle, Chief Nepinak, help me out here, Craig Mackinaw, is it?
Yeah, Mackinaw, yeah.
Do you all agree? You see this pretty much the same way? Seeing this eye to eye?
Yeah, we do, and there's a lot more people too as well. We also got confirmation from BC, Northern BC, with the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, who have clearly come out, who have said this act has to go. So we've got parts of Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, Quebec. That's virtually the majority of the Assembly of First Nations. So what needs to be done is that there needs to be called very quickly some special meeting to be able to determine where AFN stands on this collectively. Because if we wait till July, the Assembly, the legislation will already be passed. And so there needs to be either the Confederacy of Nations that gets called, which is an element that operates between national assemblies, or a national emergency education summit needs to be called in order for people to be able to address it.
This is a grassroots issue. I'm hearing a lot of talk about this. Do you think this might possibly be the beginning of some kind of grassroots movement that might come up and be a sort of alternative to the Assembly of First Nations?
Well, I think there's got to be a grassroots participation in everything that we do. Days are long gone when leaders could make decisions on their own, and most don't. You know, most touch base with their communities, but where we don't touch base most of the time is outside of our communities. And so we need to make that a regular practice of being able to reach out and touch our citizens, because we have a lot of support out there with our citizens. We have a lot of resources with those citizens who live outside of our communities, and but still our land outside of our communities. The reserve is not ends. Our lands don't end when we step off the reserve. Our lands are everywhere out there. And so we need to encourage everyone out there to be able to part of these discussions. There's a social network out there. Express your views, because it will be heard and it will be passed on. And that's the way that we create the kind of dialogue we need to be able to become stronger amongst ourselves.
Now, this bill's in first reading now. Presumably, the government's going to push. They're going to try and get this passed, and Stephen Harper has a majority. What are you trying to do to stop this bill?
Well, we're still pushing hard. We're trying to work with the opposition. We're looking at other avenues. There's still a legal challenge going ahead by Quebec, which on the duty to consult. And then, of course, in Ontario, we'll have an emergency education meeting on the 8th and 9th in Thunder Bay, where more strategies will be developed. We, as a region right now, and I, at the press conference, I never talked about blocking roads or any kind of action like that. I think we have to wait until May 8th to 9th for our communities to decide what they want to do. And we will support them in what they want to be able to do. But it has to be up to them to be able to choose the actions that they want to do, and we will do whatever we can. Right now, our biggest role is public education and getting message out there that the five conditions have not been met. Anyone who says the five conditions haven't been met must not be able to read. Because all you have to do is read the act and read the five conditions that have been passed at the Gatineau Assembly last December. Put them side by side, and immediately you will be able to tell that those five conditions have not been met.
And what are some of the ways that folks can make their voice heard that might be able to participate in this and have their say as well? Are you traveling around, or you're having forums and meetings and gatherings on this?
Well, what we're doing right now is I'm mostly using the social network. I will be having some meetings. I obviously have met with already of our chief's councils, and we've been putting information out into our communities on a regular basis, and we've been sharing that information with everybody nationally. And so we're encouraging people to be able to write to the minister and say, I reject this act. We're encouraging people to write to the prime minister and say, we reject this act. And to be able to work with us to be able to develop something that's reflective of a new approach that's going to actually benefit our communities rather than to continue to disempower them. You know what's really up there, and everybody should see, is that, you know, the minister says he met the five conditions, and we're saying he hasn't. Both the minister and the First Nations are saying that we need to do something to help our children. And so if he's going to do the right thing to be able to help our children, then he needs to be able to set this act aside and come and talk to us about how the best things can be done. We stand by killing this particular bill. The only reason I used the five conditions that were set out is because the government says that's the standard they want to use. Well, if it's their standard, they haven't met it.
Grand Chief Gordon Peters, I thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you.